Light up some bonfires.
Except for the whole human sacrifice
part. Yeah. Well, there are arguably a few people I wouldn't mind sacrificing. Like, here's the thing. Based on where we're at in 2020, I mean, maybe we need a little human sacrifice.
I'm Paige.
And I'm Megan.
And this is Spooky Science Sisters.
I'm Allison Holland, host of the Kennedy Dynasty podcast. Equipped with a microphone and a long-term fascination of the Kennedy family, I am joined by an incredible cast of experts, friends, and guests to take you on a fun, relaxed, yet informative journey through history and pop culture. From book references to fashion to philanthropy to our modern expectations of the presidency itself, you'll see that there is so much more to Kennedy than just JFK or conspiracy theories. Join me for the Kennedy Dynasty podcast.
Hello, I'm Megan.
And I'm Paige.
And you're listening to Spooky Science Sisters, a podcast where we present to you a science-based and probably very giggly discussion on all things strange and unusual.
In this episode, we're going to talk about the origins of some of your favorite Halloween traditions. And with that, it's time for something spooky. So, Megan, did anything spooky happen to you in the last 2 weeks?
Paige already said to me earlier today that we might not be the Spooky Science Sisters this week. We might be the Sleepy Science Sisters. Because Paige had a very long day. I also had a long day. We, because of like an indirect COVID exposure in my daughter's daycare room, we don't have daycare for 2 weeks, which meant that I had to wake up at 5 this morning so that way I could go to work for a few hours and then take care of her while my husband worked, because his schedule is less flexible. So anyway, so I'm very tired. So my something spooky did not happen until this morning when I woke up. I took the dog for a walk at like 5:30 this morning when it was still very dark out. And yeah, I mean, we've already established that I'm like pretty good at creeping myself out. So it's like, this is very possibly just nothing. But we were a couple blocks from the house, and I live on like a semi busier road, but obviously it was still pretty quiet because it was really early in the morning. But I heard this like car coming down the street or vehicle coming down the street that was like rattling super loud. And at first I thought that it was just like somebody who had like a piece of shit trailer or something hooked up to their car. But then I like turned around to look as they were coming towards us down the street. And it was like somebody's car who was like the front end was like totally fucked up. Like parts of it were dragging. They had no headlights. And yeah, they're just like driving down the street. And they sort of like slowed down a little bit when they got close to me, like almost like they slowed down when they saw me. And I was like, I definitely probably spooked myself out. But I was like, did this person just like hit something and then drive off or something? And like, now I'm about to be murdered, so I'm not like a witness to this hit and run or something like that. So I got really nervous about it, and it was really loud, and like, so I could hear them, and I think they must have like taken like a left turn just down the road, because you sort of head like towards the highway and stuff that way. But for a little bit, it like almost sounded like they were turning around and like coming back around.
So did you run?
I like 100% hid behind a bush.
Good choice.
Like there was like a hedge and it was dark. And so I just sort of like grabbed the dog and hid behind a bush until I like absolutely established that they were definitely getting further. I don't know. I just had a really bad feeling about it. And I don't know. I was like, this is probably nothing. But like, then they tell you that people have gut feelings and it helps them. So, and it was like a little weird that they slowed down a little bit when they saw me.
That's super weird. I've had that happen a couple times and it scared the shit out of me. So I also probably would have hidden.
Yes. Why hid behind a bush? Paige, did anything happen to you that was spooky?
No, nothing spooky, I don't think. I mean, it's been a weird week, but I don't think anything spooky's happened.
Okay.
I know. It's getting boring over here. Sometime soon, though, it's coming. I can tell. Something fucked up is on its way.
For now, I'll just convince myself that I'm about to be murdered. This is the second of our October episodes and our Halloween season, spooky season episodes. So I'm super excited. We've been like waiting for, I think I thought of this quite a while ago. So I've been waiting for months and months to get to do Halloween traditions. So we'll start with a little bit of history about the holiday and sort of how it becomes the holiday that we know today as Halloween. So I think most people at this point are familiar with the fact that Halloween started out as this pagan festival or celebration called Samhain, or I've also seen that some people pronounce it Samhain, but this is spelled Samhain. So you definitely want to say Samhain.
Samhain.
And I think I only found out that it's pronounced Samhain because they say it in the first episode of Outlander. So,
yeah, I'm not going to lie. I saw that in your notes and I straight up looked it up because I'm like, there's no fucking way that's how you say it.
That's how you say it.
I know. I found it. Now I believe you.
Yes. So that is, that's how you say it. Don't say Samhain. So it is based, or Samhain is this 3-day ancient Celtic pagan festival that would have occurred sometime around the end of October, 1st of November. The Celts lived during the Iron Age, which, oh, thank you, Paige, for filling in the dates for that, which was circa 500 to 332 BC in what we now know as Ireland, Scotland, the UK. So Samhain, which in modern Irish means summer's end, was a celebration that marked the end of summer, the end of the harvest, and the beginning of the Celtic New Year. So their calendar year was actually divided into two halves, a light half and a dark half. And so Samhain was the beginning of the dark half of the year. So, you know, it's a time of death and rebirth to them, the end of this harvest period, the beginning of what was probably a pretty challenging existence in winter. And you sort of start to get these early associations with this idea of death being associated with the holiday, because for them, it truly was like that period of time truly was a matter of life and death. Did they have enough stuff stored up to survive this, you know, cold, dark winter about to descend upon them? So it's always, you know, it's just sort of naturally and for a long time been this spooky time of the year. But I guess back then, in a much more literal sense of like, is my family gonna make it through the winter?
Yeah, it actually is kind of depressing.
Yes. Yeah, that's the physical aspect, literal aspect of what's going on during this time of year. But they also had this supernatural component to it, because they also believed that during Samhain, time and space became flexible. And that's how one of the things I read put it, which I thought was interesting. But this idea that the veil or the divide between life and death, or between our world and other worlds, and in this case, other worlds like the fairy world, was at its thinnest. So it still has this supernatural element to it.
And I read that the way that this was often celebrated was that they would light bonfires.
Bonfires, yeah.
They would light bonfires. Bonfires. And then also read that there was like animal, and you wrote this too, potentially human sacrifice. Yes. And that they would just like essentially like get party. They'd celebrate, get wasted. as you should. And then I had also read somewhere that people would wear costumes to ward off ghosts. And I didn't see that. I didn't see that in a lot of the articles I read. I think that was in the History Channel article I read, which you'll talk about a little bit. But then I also read another article or two that kind of made it sound like there's no actual, and I think you're going to talk about this, but there's no like actual evidence that any of this celebration occurred the way that we think it did, or the way that it's written that they did.
Yes. Yeah. So that is what I was going to talk about next. So this is all, yeah, what we think that they did and what they've been able to garner through, I guess, the literature or the history that's available. So the origin and the particulars of what happened during this Samhain festival are a bit mysterious because the Celts didn't keep written records. So what's available is this folkloric literature, like the Celtic sagas. And you also had writings that were done by Roman authors, because at one point the area was incorporated, or I guess conquered is the better word, into the Roman Empire. But they likely wouldn't have, I guess, done a faithful job of transcribing these stories or transcribing these traditions. And in one historian's words, they probably would have trashed the traditions. So we don't really know exactly what happened. This is just what they've been able to, what historians think went on. And there's also some argument as to how much of this Samhain. So everybody, you know, immediately points to, you know, Samhain is the original Halloween. But there is argument as to how much it actually contributed to the modern celebration of Halloween. However, I read this book called Trick or Treat, A History of Halloween by Lisa Morton. And she actually has a few books about Halloween. She's a historian. And she says that although historians have argued over how much Samhain really contributed to the modern celebration of Halloween, it seems likely that the Celtic festival's peculiar mix of harvest, rowdy celebration, and fearful supernatural beliefs gave Halloween much of its character. So, yeah, I mean, that just like pretty much sounds like a good time.
Yeah, it sounds great.
Light up some bonfires.
Except for the whole human sacrifice.
Sacrifice.
Part.
Yeah. Well, there are arguably a few people I wouldn't mind sacrificing. Like, here's the thing. Based on where we're at in 2020, I mean, maybe we need a little human sacrifice. To appease the ancient gods. That's what I've learned. Okay. So
let's get back to Halloween the way it was meant to be celebrated.
I am talking. Well, okay. Yeah. Sorry. I thought you were going to say, let's get back to talking about Halloween. But yeah, no, exactly. Let's celebrate Halloween the way it was meant to be celebrated. Fucking murdering people.
It's taking a dark turn tonight.
Okay. So we start with Samhain. And from an article from history.com, which is the History Channel's website, they say that there was an association with the Romans' Feralia ceremony, which was the culmination of Parentalia, which was a celebration of the spirits of their ancestors. And they also say that, which, you know, that, I mean, that kind of seems like it goes with Halloween and Samhain for sure. Mm-hmm. But they also claim that there's this holiday that the Romans had to honor the goddess Pomona, whose symbol was the apple. And so everybody claims like, oh, like that's where we get bobbing for apples. And that's where we get this association of apples with Halloween. In the Trick or Treat book, though, it says that the Romans like most certainly did not have a day or festival to celebrate Pomona. And that this is like an error that was made by early historians and then just like continues to be propagated forward. So I had this in my notes that I was like, once again, the History Channel disappoints me. Because like, you guys, I just like, what happened to you? Like, didn't the History Channel used to be a reliable source? And like now it's just a fucking nightmare.
I don't know if it was ever really reliable or if it was because it was called the History Channel, we all just assumed it was. And now we're just finding out that we were wrong.
That's very possible. Really, the second they started showing Ancient Aliens and Skinwalker Ranch,
it was all downhill.
It was all over for the History Channel.
I would love to know like what the History Channel I want to say bio, but I don't know if that's the right word. Like the description is for the channel.
Oh,
like, do they claim to be a legitimate history retelling channel?
Probably. Well, but either way, they definitely have some questionable Halloween facts on their website. So fuck off. Fuck off, Pomona. This isn't about you.
All right.
Anyway, on to the next religion.
Onward. So with the spread of Christianity, many of the pagan traditions were evolved and then reframed as Christian holidays. On May 13th, 609 A.D., the Pope established a celebration called All Saints Day or All Hallowmas.
Yeah. Either All Hallows or All Hallowsmas.
All Hallowsmas.
I don't know. That's, yeah. I mean, that's what they called it in Middle English.
So All Saints Day or All Hallowsmas, which is what it was called in Middle English. So the day before that holiday would have been All Hallows Eve. And basically, what they did is they took a pagan holiday called Lemuria that occurred on that day, May 13th. And like I said, they just kind of reimagined or adopted it and turned it into this Christian holiday.
So Lemuria was a day where Roman pagans would try to placate their dead. And I think in their belief system, they believed that ghosts or lemurs, I guess, lemurs, I have no idea, would come up and haunt people. So in order to try and make them not do that, I guess, they'd pour milk on their graves and they would offer them little cakes, which reminds me of magicians. Like, it specifically said little cakes, which I loved. But yeah, like Paige said, this is the Pope and the early Christians saw it as, rather than try to fight against the pagan religion, and which, like, I'm sure they also did, but in terms of establishing, you know, Christianity, they found that it was better to reframe the pagan holidays and retain some of those traditions versus just, like, completely bulldozing them, because it made it easier to convert pagans.
Because they had success with kind of adopting the Lemuria holiday, they then moved All Saints Day in the middle of the 8th century to November 1st in order to kind of take over the Samhain traditions. Later, November 2nd was then added as All Souls Day to honor all dead Christians, not just saints. This is important because it gives Halloween its association with death and the supernatural. So before this, I mean, I don't really, do you know a whole lot about what All Hallows Mass was prior to, like, what the celebration was, or like what the day was?
Well, so All Saints Day is, yeah, to honor Catholic saints or Christian saints. And then they added All Souls Day, which, like you said, was like everybody who's dead and who was Christian, or I guess in this case specifically Catholic, to honor them. So it just, like, it really, I guess, emphasizes that this is a festival about honoring your honoring or celebrating, I guess, the people, the Christians that you've known that have passed on. It gives Halloween as we know it this association, because there was definitely this, you know, sort of supernatural, you know, the veil between life and death is thin with the original pagan celebration of Samhain as well.
Right. Well, that's Halloween.
Yep. That's at least Halloween up until the Middle Ages, sort of. And so now we're going to take a look at how that history gets us to the Halloween traditions that we have today. So we have several of those that we're going to talk about. So the first one is, you know, I guess sort of the big one, right? We carve jack-o'-lanterns. We carve faces into pumpkins. And this is supposedly related to a piece of folklore, a story about a guy named Stingy Jack. So Stingy Jack is a trickster and, I don't know, just not a great guy. And he tricks the devil, and I think they're saying that he tricks the devil, like, multiple times, like once to delay the devil taking his soul, and then again later. But he tricks the devil out of taking his soul. But when he finally dies, he was not a good guy, like I said, so heaven also doesn't want him. So he is condemned to wander purgatory. But the devil gives him a piece of hellfire. And in some of the versions, it's just he gives him a lump of coal. But either way, this is to light his way as he wanders purgatory for eternity. And he puts this in a carved out turnip. And so because of this story, people began carving out gourds, and eventually Americans substituted gourds and turnips, and eventually Americans substituted pumpkins because they're easier to carve and they were native to America, and they didn't have them available in Europe. And the idea was that they were either put out to sort of scare evil spirits, or it was, you know, thought that they would, like, confuse Jack, like he was out and about on the night. But the name comes from, you know, he's Jack of the Lantern, and then eventually gets shortened to Jack-o'-lantern. And that first Jack-o'-lantern reference comes from author Nathaniel Hawthorne.
I love this story.
I think it's fun.
I actually didn't know about the turnips until like we first started looking into this. Did you?
Oh, really?
Yeah, I had no idea.
Okay. I'd seen pictures of like the turnips carved before. They're which, like, fucking, seems like a real pain in the butt.
They're terrifying. And I've decided that's what I want to do from now on is carve turnips.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen a turnip in real life?
Good point.
I mean, like, they exist, but like.
But they're.
But like, small. Have you ever gotten one? Yeah, like they're small.
Yes, I have like seen one. And good point. Like...
Well, I just mean like, okay. My point was not like, oh, you fucking idiot, you haven't seen a turnip. It was more like they're so tiny. Like they're more like potatoes, right? Like they're also roots, aren't they?
Yeah, they're pretty. Yeah, they are. Yeah. And they're
They're not like pumpkins or squash or whatever, where they're big things that are easy to carve. I mean, you can have big turnips, but like, yeah, they're more like, I guess, potatoes.
Yeah,
they kind of look like giant radishes, don't they?
I don't think
so. Do I know what a turnip looks like? It's
a radish is more like round and purple, isn't it? I thought a turnip was more like, it's like I would say it's in between.
They look like giant radishes.
Radish carrot. Tell me I'm wrong.
Google turnip right now.
It looks like.
I guess it depends on the variety of turnip. But yeah, your radish carrot looks like this one picture.
Yeah. Yeah, they would be super hard to carve. But that's kind of why I want to do it.
Yeah. Because, like, there's no pulp in them. Like, they're more like a potato texture, I would think.
Yeah.
Or even, yeah, like you said, like a carrot texture or radish texture. Like, how the flip are you going to carve that out?
I have never eaten a turnip, though. I will say that. I've eaten a radish, and I think they're disgusting. But
oh, I like radishes. But I've had turnips, like, cut up into... like baked vegetables and stuff. They're good, but they don't taste that different from potatoes. Huh. Okay. Well, we are hopefully going to be together for Halloween. We are going to carve some turnips and we will post the results.
We're going to have turnip carving contests.
And there
I've just now decided.
Is a good chance I'm going to give up halfway. Okay, you heard it here, though. We promise. Mm-hmm. Yeah, even if we're not together, you better buy some fucking turnips and you're going to carve some turnips.
I'll do it.
Okay. I'm very excited. But anyway, yeah, the legend, I keep saying like folklore. I have no idea what I'm talking about. The story, the legend of Stingy Jack.
The legend.
The folklore.
The myth.
The legend of Stingy Jack.
The man. Stingy Jack.
It's a good one, though. It's a fun story. So, and I didn't write down the super detailed version, but, and like, you know, we're supposed to be spooky science sisters, and it's like, there's no science behind this. Like, this is just superstition.
We're just the spooky sisters tonight.
We're just the sleepy spooky sisters. Okay.
Okie dokie.
Tell me about trick or treating.
Yeah, the next one that we took on was trick or treating. And there are like a lot of stories as to how or why trick or treating has become a thing.
Yeah. Which sort of suggests to me that it's like, no one fucking knows.
Nobody knows what's going on here. So some people argue that the origin is from the pagans leaving out goodies to bribe or placate the spirits or other creatures out during Samhain.
Yes. And then a little bit later, the idea of trick-or-treating is potentially related to medieval Christian traditions. So people were encouraged around the festival or holiday of All Souls Day to pray for souls stuck in purgatory, and were told that if enough prayers were offered, then a soul could ascend to heaven. And I had some like questions about this. Like, were we praying for specific people, or was this just like sort of like generally? Like, how did these souls that are ascending get chosen out of like all the ones in purgatory?
You had to have been praying for specific.
Yeah, but like, how would you know? Anyway.
Oh, that's a good point.
I had some questions about the...
Well, just random ones get chosen.
Right. Like, I was just a little confused about the logic behind this, which, I mean, I probably should just accept it.
You were gooder than some of the other souls.
I guess so. But anyway, so this leads to children and beggars going souling door to door. And like, the word is actually souling, which I think is a really weird word. But they would do this in exchange for something called soul cakes, which were spiced cakes filled with raisins, which sound delightful. In exchange for these, the beggars would say that they would offer up prayers for these souls in purgatory. But like, again, that's like weird. Like, yeah, maybe I'm just an asshole. Like, I'm thinking like, again, like if you took somebody's soul cakes, did that mean that your prayers were like going specifically towards people that they knew? Or were we just sort of like doing this for the general good of souls in purgatory?
I'm going for general good. That seems to make the most sense.
I guess so.
Even though...
Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it's what we're fine. Going with.
It's fine. But anyway, I had some questions about the logistics behind how purgatory works, but I'm just a heathen, so I guess I just don't know. All right.
And then some sources argue that the modern trick-or-treating stems from what's called bell snickling, which I just think is great. I have questions about this, but I'll get through it first.
Okay.
This is a tradition in German-American communities where children dress up in costume, and then they'll call on their neighbors to see if the adults can guess their identities. And then in one version of the practice, the children are rewarded with food or other treats if nobody can identify them. My question, though, is that I thought bell snickling was like a Christmas tradition.
So did I. Like, I also thought that bell snickling was Christmas because in the office, Dwight does Schrute family Christmas, and like, he dresses up like bell schnickel, which is hilarious. But yeah, so I don't know if it was like just because it was around the same time that they sort of think that
it just kind of got influenced
the idea
it.
From it. Yeah, I have no idea.
Okay, that makes more sense.
Yeah, so that, because I also thought that it was more like a Christmas thing. So we've gone through three possible origins of trick-or-treating, and like, here's the real answer. It's probably just like they all sort of snowball into one another and become modern trick-or-treating. But honestly, a lot of Halloween as we know it today was brought to America by Scottish and Irish immigrants. And they're the ones that actually really bring, I guess, sort of the like trickster trouble causing side of Halloween to America, which I sort of love because I have like Scottish and Irish heritage, mostly German, but definitely significant Scottish and Irish heritage. And it's like, yeah.
I'm a trickster.
We're bringing the wildness to Halloween. The Scots believed that on Halloween, that was when the bogeyman would come out and cause trouble, and that, you know, they could sort of be, we could be wading through any gate. So it really had this, the holiday really had this association of pranking with them. They potentially had this, their own secular version of this souling practice of going around and asking for soul cakes in exchange for prayers called guising, in which they would have offered jokes or songs or other, I guess, quote unquote, tricks in exchange for treats. So in the early 20th century, Halloween is, I guess, because of the influence of, again, these Scottish and Irish immigrants, like, really gets a little out of hand. It becomes known as Mischief Night or Devil's Night, and kids are out getting into all sorts of trouble. They're like tipping over outhouses, setting things on fire, derailing streetcars.
Hasn't Devil's Night turned into like a different night now?
You might be right. That does sound like it's a thing.
Because I feel, and I'm only remembering this really because I remember it being talked about in Detroit, that there was specifically a night where things, like one night a year or whatever, where people tend to like set things on fire or things get kind of crazy in the city. And I thought it was still
like the night before Halloween or something like that.
It might be. I don't remember. I'll look it up while you're
staying. Yeah, we'll have to double check that. But anyway, so I did watch this like very hilarious drunk history segment that was like 5 minutes long that kind of referenced this or explained Mischief Night, Devil's Night, and basically attributes this part of what we kind of know as Halloween to a specific woman named Elizabeth Krebs, who lived in Hiawatha, Kansas, and was like real pissed that kids kept destroying her garden every year on Halloween. So she like basically decides she's going to throw this like massive Halloween party and parade and try to keep them out of trouble. And so she's potentially the one who sort of says like, hey, like, let's give the kids something like structured to do so that way they're not out getting into all manner of mischief on the night of Halloween.
That is brilliant.
I mean, that's just like generally parenting right there. That's parenting a toddler for sure. It's like, let's just give you a structured activity. So like, we just keep you out of trouble for as much of your life as we can. So anyway, but again, Halloween kind of gets a little bit out of hand in America, potentially spurred on by the Great Depression because, you know, it's generally a desperate time. The Halloween of 1933 is actually called by some Black Halloween because of how much damage was done in some cities on that night. So, you know, potentially it's this Elizabeth Krebs woman in 1913 who comes up with this idea to kind of give everybody structured activities, but potentially it's also just sort of generally homeowners who start bribing kids with homemade treats like popcorn balls to prevent them from causing trouble. And in 1939 is when you get the first appearance of the phrase or the description of the custom of trick-or-treating in print for the first time. So it takes a while. So like trick-or-treating as a concept is fairly recent, or like as we know it now is fairly recent.
Yeah, and I had read that it really didn't start getting popular until the 50s, I had thought it was popular prior to that.
Right. And like popular, I guess, in like the more commercial way that we know it now.
Right.
Yeah.
So then I looked specifically into like why candy, like why did candy become the treat that everybody gets now? And until the middle of the 20th century, there really was anything that you would get for Halloween. And I've gotten some of these things, but people would get toys, which I think is cool. Like I would have wanted toys as a kid. trick-or-treat everywhere you go, you get a new toy. Some people would give coins, fruit, nuts, like you said, popcorn balls, any of those kinds of treats. It really wasn't candy that was given out. But with the rise of the popularity of trick-or-treating in the 50s, it inspired candy companies to make a marketing push with small individually wrapped pieces of candy. So then basically out of convenience, people just decided to buy the candy. But it didn't really dominate other treats for trick-or-treating until parents started fearing really anything that was unwrapped in the 70s. So the 70s is when all the scares, I guess, started happening, or the stories started coming up about people doing weird stuff to candy, or doing weird stuff to unwrapped things. People turned to candy.
Got it. So when I was a kid trick-or-treating, I can remember getting like some quarters sometimes. I definitely remember getting like popcorn balls, but I feel like they were pre-packaged ones. So you can still buy those in stores. But they're like pre-packaged individual things. Like I don't have any distinct memories of getting like homemade goods at all from anybody. At the point in time when I was trick-or-treating.
Yeah, I remember there was one man who always gave Little Debbie's. There were a couple places that I got fruit, like apples and stuff. And
yeah, I got an apple at one point.
Definitely had to throw those away. and then I think there was like somebody who gave out like cans of soda. But other than that, everything was candy.
Yeah.
I never got any coins. That would have been kind of cool.
Yeah. Which is like sort of funny because like kids fucking hate getting produce and stuff like that, like apples or fruit or whatever. And it's like, produce is fucking expensive. Like, depending on how many, like as an adult, depending on how many trick-or-treaters you were getting, if you were giving out apples, like, damn.
Right. Just give a damn bag of Skittles. It's cheaper.
It probably is. To even give full-size candy bars, it might be cheaper, depending on the apples that you're giving out.
Anyway. I am like 99.9% sure that I'm about to tell you a true story, but there's 0.1% of me that's wondering if maybe I just made this up some night in my sleep. But I would swear to you, when I was younger and we were trick-or-treating, there was a house that we called the dollhouse, and it was this older woman who lived there, and her entire living room was like floor to ceiling display cases of porcelain dolls.
This sounds like something you dreamed.
I'm like pretty sure this is a real thing. And now okay. I'm going to try to find someone who.
Yeah. What's Steven
remember? I don't know. I know I used to go with like Michelle trick-or-treating, so she'd probably be the best person to ask. But
okay. You'd like go inside this woman's house?
Yeah, she had like buckets of candy, and you would get like a handful from each bucket.
Like inside her house.
Yes.
That's like
the shit.
How you get murdered.
I know. So that's why I'm not really sure if I'm making this up. But but I would swear to you this happened, and it was like my favorite house to go to.
Okay. Did you have any neighbors that would like dress up and try to scare the shit out of kids?
I don't remember anybody really doing that. No, I mean, I've done that, but I don't think anyone's ever done that to me.
Okay. I do. But I think today, like, get in trouble for it.
Yeah, probably.
Which is a bummer. All right. Well, yeah. So here's the thing. Trick-or-treating, we've got 4 different possible origins, but again, they probably all combine into what we know today or what we do today. Okay, so our next big tradition is that people wear costumes on Halloween. So I think Paige mentioned this before, but again, it's like nobody fucking knows where the Halloween traditions came from. So it's just sort of all over the place. There are like different things. Yeah. Which is funny because you read articles and people are like, you know, people put very, you know, written in stone statements in their articles. And it's like, but You really don't know. Anyway, so the pagans would potentially disguise themselves from, and I read this a few places, from otherworldly creatures like fairies or ghosts that came out during Samhain so that they would be left alone. So again, it's got this like, I mean, it's still got this, it's very supernatural trickster association with it. You didn't want the ghosts to pick on you. So you would dress up like a ghost. So they'd be like, oh, it's just another ghost.
Just another ghost.
Just another ghost. Okay, so then in medieval times, we're on to this All Hallows Eve, All Saints Day, All Souls Day, three-day festival. So again, that three-day festival really continues because Samhain was 3 days as well. But this is potentially when beggars got rowdy and drunk on All Hallows Eve, and it was basically convenient for them in that case to hide their identities and hide any bad behavior by wearing a mask. And some of these people would go house to house in costumes to put on little plays to be rewarded with food and drink. So again, potentially there's some trick-or-treat influence there as well. And in, I guess, the UK, in Britain, November 5th, 1605 is when Guy Fawkes tries to blow up Parliament, and he is captured and tortured and eventually hanged. And as part of this research, I found out that he was like tortured so badly that they had to like carry him up to the platform to hang him because he was like in very bad shape. So hey, not great for him. And that he like wasn't even really the, like, he wasn't the end-all, be-all mastermind of this plan. So he sort of gets scapegoated a little bit. Anyway, big aside. So November 5th, remember the 5th of November becomes bonfire night. And they, you know, turn it into this big thing where children wear masks. They wear Guy Fawkes masks to mock him. And they burn effigies of him. And they run around causing mischief. So I guess some things thought like, or some things sort of suggested that this like contributed to the costume wearing on Halloween, whereas other things that I read sort of suggested that this was something that was basically like pulling people away from the Halloween traditions. So a little bit unclear in that respect. And in the U.S., of course, costumes get commercialized and they become part of this effort to try to tame things a little bit because people are getting real pissed about their stuff being ruined or about things getting set on fire. So again, you know, you have these publications coming out from companies saying, you know, you should host a Halloween party or you should have a Halloween parade and dress your kids up in costumes. And Anoka, Minnesota, which I found out about this not too long ago, like maybe a couple months ago. And I'm like very pissed that I've lived in the Midwest for a significant portion, the majority of my life, really. And like nobody has told me that I've been within driving distance of a place that has had a Halloween parade every year since 1920 and bills itself as the Halloween capital of the world.
So that's our trip after Salem, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. What? Oh, yeah. Here's the thing, listeners. In addition to just being like generally pissed about the condition of the world and people being total fucking assholes, we've been personally hurt by this situation because Paige and I were supposed to go on a girls' trip long weekend to Salem, Massachusetts, the weekend before Halloween and do all sorts of spooky historical things and have a fabulous, wonderful time. But we can't now. And
we were supposed to be there a week from today.
And who even knows if we're going to be able to go next year at this rate?
Right. I'm not counting on it.
Yeah. And people are just you've ruined this for me, people. So hopefully we get to go next year. But here's my little PSA. There is still a pandemic. Cases are going up. Even in Europe, where they had actually did a good job with the initial wave. Well, some countries did a good job with the initial wave and their case numbers got really low. They're seeing a big resurgence of cases. This is basically playing out like the pandemic, the Spanish flu in 1918, 100 fucking years ago. And we're doing the same goddamn things now and people are dying. It is not over. Wear your fucking mask. Just don't go hanging out with your friends and doing all this stuff. I should be getting ready to go to fucking Salem next week.
Don't ruin it for us next year. Yes. Is what we're trying
if
to
I
say.
Don't get to go next year, some shit's gonna go down. Then we really are bringing back the original Halloween traditions. It's fucking human sacrifices and burning shit to the ground. This is the podcast episode that gets me arrested. Or at least put on some sort of I don't know.
Some sort of watch
list. she might be a Halloween terrorist. God damn right.
I'm scared.
I'm gonna
on to our next topic.
Some of my angriness. Let's talk about cats.
Okay, so yes, the next thing we're going to talk about is black cats. And I guess this isn't just a Halloween thing. This is just a general superstition type thing that black cats are bad luck or that black cats are scary or evil. Though before I start this, I will say that I read that black cats are no longer adopted less than other cats for a long time. Yeah, apparently that's not a thing anymore. I read a couple places
that.
Yeah, and apparently I read a couple places that it was still the case, and then I've read, I think it was the ASPCA, I think, said. I'd have to go back and double check that, but I definitely read that that is no longer the case. So, I mean, that doesn't mean you should stop adopting black cats. It just means that the black cats are loved now. So that's good. Anyways, black cats.
Yeah. But don't they also do we think there's any truth to places not letting people adopt black cats on Halloween because they're afraid that they're going to do fucked up shit to them? That's a little urban legend that I heard, but I don't know if it's true.
I mean, that wouldn't surprise me, but I don't think I've ever even heard that. That's terrifying.
Yeah, I had heard that they wouldn't let people adopt adopt them. They wouldn't let people adopt them on Halloween because they're afraid they're going to do weird stuff to them. But I sort of wonder if that was some urban legend that arose out of the satanic panic stuff, which was in the 70s or 80s or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah, I can't say that I've ever heard that.
Anyway,
tell black
me about cats.
So I read five or so articles that specifically talked about Pope Gregory the Ninth being the whole issue behind the black cats stuff. like him. A lot of people believe that he called for a massacre. And in some articles I read that it was black cats, and others I read it was all cats. But saying that they were the, like, basically devil reincarnate. Like, they are the devil. Devil cats. and supposedly, like, after this, people started burning cats in the streets. And they have, like, this, like, whole, like, an actual, like, cat massacre. And like I said, it sounds, based off of what I read, a lot of the articles make it seem as if this is all cats. This isn't just black cats.
Okay. But, like, side note, Cat Massacre would be a great band name.
Oh, it really would.
Anyway.
And so then when the Black Death, so when the plague occurs in the 1300s, everybody blames the cat massacre because people think that the lack of cats causes this increase in the black rat population, and the black rats are what carry the plague. That's where a lot of
people doing things that are not good for them and don't make any scientific sense, so that way lots of more people get sick and die. That would never happen.
Not today.
Anyway.
So this is, you know, story after story I read, but then I started reading that none of this is even true. I wasn't there, obviously. I can't say, I don't know that anybody now can, but they're saying that maybe it's true, but that there's nothing really to prove that it is. There's no evidence to show that a cat massacre ever occurred. There's maybe some drawings or some art that show people, you know, burning a cat or doing weird things with the cat. But there's also lots of, you know, that same evidence, a lot of pictures, a lot of art that's done with people having cats as house pets. So it's hard to say whether or not this cat massacre really happened, and even if it did, whether or not it was specifically black cats or if it was all cats. But then a lot of people probably know about black cats now is that they were thought to be like a witch's familiar. So there's a little story about kind of where this thought came from, and it was in the 1560s in England, on a night, a moonless night, a father and son. It's very important that it was moonless.
And they definitely 100% know that to be true.
Right. Absolutely. A father and his son are traveling, and they cross paths with a black cat. And I don't really understand why, but apparently the story goes that they start pelting the cat with rocks, which, like, fucking just rude. Makes them a bunch of dick bags. But they start throwing rocks at this cat until this poor cat goes home to the woman who at the time was accused of being a witch. The following day, the father and son saw the woman who lived in the house, and when she came out of the house, she was limping and bruised. So they assumed that witches could turn themselves into black cats at night to roam around unobserved. So I guess that's where a lot of that thought of the black cat being the witch's familiar came from.
Got it. So basically, but these guys are just like fucking animal abusers.
Right.
And then they also turn out to be misogynists. Hashtag get woke.
And then they cause this whole problem for the fucking cats. So that, I mean, I don't really know, once again, there's any real good story as to why black cats are seen as unlucky. But this is where a lot of, I guess, those stories come from.
Yeah. I like black cats.
I love black cats.
Yes. Although I think I had heard that, like, I think just black animals in general, because it happens to dogs as well. I think they do tend to get adopted a little bit less because they tend to not they tend to be a little bit more difficult to photograph well. So if you're looking at photographs of shelter animals, then, you know, the black ones are just a little bit harder to photograph and get good pictures of. So people tend to avoid them a little bit more. That's what I heard.
Interesting.
So just like,
or, you know, yeah, like, if you even like adopting online and you don't, I mean, you're looking at photos,
right,
to go visit.
Yeah. Then like, if, you know, it's not a great photo, it's a black, because it's a black animal and the camera has trouble with it, then you might just skip over them. So I like specifically would want a black cat though.
Yeah. I love black cats.
Yeah.
It's like maybe you're just a witch.
Also true. All right. So it's time for our next tradition, which is bobbing for which is bobbing for apples, which does not have anything to do with the goddess Pomona History Channel. Get it together. But apples do make a lot of appearances in Celtic mythology and have connections to the other world, which I think means like fairies and shit. But anyway, they also have these strong associations with various fortune-telling traditions that were associated with Halloween. So I guess bobbing for apples, which I had no idea used to be considered a form of divination. So this is according to NPR. So they would, people would, obviously, we all know what bobbing for apples is, right? Dunk their heads into a vat of water, try to bite into an apple. But women would mark the apples with names, I guess, of like potential future spouses. And then whoever's apple they pulled out would be the person that they would marry. So I guess it's just like the bobbing for apples version of like, what were those little paper foldy things you used to do in like middle school?
Oh,
what are they called? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Let me think about it for a second. I'll get back to you.
Okay.
Or like that mash game.
Or that mash game. Yeah. So this sort of seems like that. Anyway. Yes. So they probably, the bobbing for apple tradition probably comes from, again, Scottish or Irish traditions. So they give us, again, a lot of our modern Halloween things that we do. But there's another one, also apples, which this one, oddly enough, I had actually heard of before. But a woman would stand in front of a mirror on Halloween with an apple, and she would either eat it or she would slice it up and she would look in the mirror and like see the face of the person, her beloved, in the glass. So like whoever she was supposed to marry in the glass. So that's sort of a weird one. But apparently that was part of the traditions that were described by the famous poet Robert Burns, because he did some writing about various Halloween traditions. So that's bobbing for apples.
Cootie catcher?
Cootie catcher! That's correct.
That is correct. I don't know why it was called a cootie catcher, but it was.
What was it called, a cootie catcher? I don't know, but either way, that's 100% what it's called. So okay. We bob for apples. We also light things on fire because bonfires are a big part of Halloween. Although, like, I feel like, are they a big part of Halloween anymore?
I don't know. I mean, they're a big part of my life, but I don't know they're a big part of Halloween.
Yeah, like, I feel like that must be an older tradition. I don't know. So the thing listed, like, bonfires, candles, but like we said before, bonfires, they lit big ones during the Samhain festival. And, you know, part of it was they were performing potentially, well, they're sacrificing or burning certain crops and animals as sacrifices to their gods. There was apparently fortune telling. Paige said they might have worn costumes. And one of the traditions that they mentioned was that people would take the coals from the sacred fire, this big bonfire that had been lit by the druids, which I think were basically their priests, and use it to relight their fire at home, which would have gone out while they were out celebrating and getting drunk with all their friends. So I think the one thing about this about bonfires that I guess definitely passes to today is that these big bonfires probably would have attracted insects, and insects means that you attract bats. So some people say that we get this association of bats with Halloween because of these bonfires. And so candles or bonfires, along with lighting candles in, I guess, more Christian traditions, there's this association with sort of like lighting the way for souls who are seeking the afterlife, or potentially for souls who are like stuck in purgatory, or potentially for like protecting your property. So it's all over the place.
It could be a lot of things again. Now we're going to talk about some of the, the spookiest Halloween legends, which is the razor blades and apples and the poison in the candy, or just, you know, tainted candy. And whether or not it's even true, and if it isn't, where did it come from?
Yeah. So this is more like debunking. Like, this is more like contemporary or urban legends, like not actually the traditional folklore origins of Halloween.
Right. See, we got to the debunking eventually. It took us some time. So I put this note in here because I just think it's funny that they specifically, so there's a point specifically where people were researching Halloween sadism, which are crimes specifically committed using Halloween treats or customs. And they basically concluded that like the threat is greatly exaggerated. That like there maybe, you know, have been a couple of small things that have happened, or things that are like happening around the same time as Halloween, or they've happened to candy once before. But like overall, there's not really much threat here.
Yeah. I mean, I guess thinking of it from like the scientific or like the psychological perspective, which is what we typically do on this show. But again, this is special spooky Halloween episode. I would think that, yeah, a lot of it is probably just coincidence, right? And like people thinking that these things are like noticing these things more around this time of year. And so it sort of like becomes this association.
Yeah.
Or maybe like people are more tempted to like do weird shit because, again, they have this like subconscious association of like, this is when I'm supposed to do these things. You know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So. Well, yes, though I don't even think there are many things that have even happened truly on Halloween. Like a lot of it, a lot of the research has shown that it's, you can't even link it to Halloween or it happening on Halloween. It's just, a lot of it is candy. Like, because it's candy, I guess it's linked to Halloween somehow.
Speaking of candy, I just opened up a apple pie Kit Kat bar.
Ooh.
Which is a special one that they've released for this fall. So
anyway,
it's not great.
Well, it is what it is. Something I've learned in my however many years, 5 years in the flavor industry, is that pumpkin spice is like really fucking hard to get right.
Okay.
It's like really, because you have to get like all the green notes in there, and it's just like really, the pumpkin flavor is really tough. So anyway,
got it. This is apple pie flavored though.
Oh, I thought you said pumpkin pie. Oh yeah, is it witch's brew?
No, it just says apple pie. I don't know what witch's brew is.
You didn't care about pumpkin pie at all. Anyways.
No. But I appreciate the story about it.
Thanks. Okie doke. So some of the stories that have kind of been linked to this fear about poisoning candy. The first is that in the 70s, there was a man who purposely poisoned his own children with putting cyanide in pixie sticks.
Which I think that is just the saddest story.
It is terrible. Well, and he also apparently didn't just give it to his children. He gave it to a couple others. And to be fair, it sounded like this one happened around Halloween. But like still.
So fuck that guy.
Right. A, fuck that guy. B, my understanding is like he wasn't just handing it out to like every trick-or-treater. Yeah, not that, that it makes it like, better, but it, you know, it wasn't like right. this whole fear right. about this, you know.
It was it like a premeditated like attack on specific people in right. his life.
Right.
But it is definitely where, like, I had heard that one before. It's definitely where a major source of one of those stories
has come from.
But he's like that type of person, numero uno on the human sacrifice list.
Wow.
Although I guess presumably if you're going to do like human sacrifices, like you got to sacrifice the good people, you know?
Right.
Like the gods don't want like the shitbag people. They want to know like you are willing to sacrifice the good people.
So this changes everything for you, I hope. Are you still willing to sacrifice people?
Yeah. That makes it tough.
Kidoki. So
tell me more about candy.
In the 19 well, this one's actually funny enough, not about candy, but for some reason it increased this fear of tainted candy, and I don't I mean, I suppose just because it's small. But in the 80s there was an issue with some acetaminophen that was or Tylenol, which was laced with cyanide, and it was put on the shelves and sold. Have you heard about this?
It sounds like vaguely familiar, but not really.
And the case went unsolved, so they couldn't figure out who did it. And I got, and maybe that's kind of what increased this fear of tainted candy, is that they couldn't figure out who did it. So they're, you know, thinking maybe they're going to do something to the candy too. I don't know.
Yeah, like somebody like would get access or get the idea to like poison something, because it would have had to be somebody like at the factory, right?
You'd think. Yeah. You'd think so. And then, and this one obviously is the earliest one, but in 64, there was a New York woman named Helen File. And she was P-F-E-I-L. I don't know. File? One of the two. File. Was arrested for handing out things like ant poison and dog biscuits to kids.
Oh, no.
And when questioned, the housewife said that she was joking and that she gave the items to kids she felt were too old to be trick-or-treating. So this one actually did occur on Halloween, but like it wasn't like she's poisoning the candy. She's just like straight up handing ant poison to kids or dog biscuits to kids as a joke. Like, haha, this is a treat or a trick. Sure. The police obviously didn't find it very funny, but she apparently thought she was funny. So there's that.
Yeah.
So again, like, sure, I get that that was probably a little scary, but I mean, it's not
she
like
wasn't
she was
doing it like with the intention of actually killing any of those
right.
kids.
She wasn't sticking ant poison in, you know, a sucker or in a bag of Skittles, or she wasn't giving the ant poison to a kid who would have been too young to understand what it was. She was like just mm-hmm. being a bitch. So
yeah,
it's okay, like we've learned, for older kids to go trick-or-treating, because if they're not trick-or-treating, they could be doing other stupid shit like knocking over outhouses or burning things down. So if you see an older kid trick-or-treating, just give them some fucking candy and let them go
That's
on their way.
That's what I figure. It's like, let kids hang on to innocent traditions, or like hang on to their youthfulness for as long as they can.
Right.
It's fine. If a 17-year-old wants to come knock on my door and get candy, I'm fine with that. And like, people have also pointed out that it might be a kid who has has some sort of developmental disorder where like they might look older, but I guess mentally, like, they may not be that old, you know? So like, mm-hmm. they might still be out trick-or-treating and like people are being shitty to them because they're like, oh, we're too old to be trick-or-treating. And it's like, well, they, yeah, like, just let kids be kids.
It's also fine. I'm 28 years old. And if I walk up to your house with a fucking basket and say trick or treat, I still expect candy. That's how it works. I say trick or treat, that's I receive candy.
Yeah.
And that's exactly
that. Anyway, so yeah, that's like PSA. Like, don't be a shithead to kids who are just like trying to have some innocent fun for, you know, potentially the last year that they get to do it. But also, so I did Megan's weird dream stories last time. Another really weird dream which was relate because you brought up Skittles. And I had this dream multiple times. And by multiple, maybe only twice, but I still feel like that's like enough for it to be notable. I had a dream where I like found or bought a bag of Skittles, but they like weren't really Skittles. They were like little radio transmitters with tiny antennas in them. So I don't know what that means.
I don't either.
I had that dream more than once.
Wait. Did anything happen in the dream, or did you just discover that the Skittles?
I don't remember. Skittles? It was an otherwise like elaborate dream, and like there was a lot of other stuff happening, and I think it was related to that. But like the only part of it that I remember was the radio transmitter Skittles. So
that's awesome. Which,
I mean, I don't know. This day and age, I might be like more worried that some person's trying to like low-jack my kid with some sort of like weird transmitter so they can come find them and take them.
Your mind is a complicated place.
Sleepy science sisters. Anyway, so the other thing that people think about when they like urban legends for Halloween is like, oh, people put razor blades in apples. And I had read a book some years ago that talked about that. And it was like, that is not a thing. Like, I think there was like a single case where somebody found like, I don't even think it was razor blade. I think it was like a piece of glass or something in an apple. But it was like the person had been storing the apples in their garage. There was some broken glass on the floor. The bag fell over and one of them got glass in it. So it was like an accident. Okay. So the last thing in terms of Halloween traditions and getting to our modern Halloween is the like Halloween today has gotten like very like extreme morbid death, gore, horror, scariness. But that probably has some pretty old origins. So first, the All Saints and All Souls celebrations were probably influenced by the Black Death. And around the time that that plague was happening, you saw a lot of images of death, of grim reapers in artwork, and these depictions find their way into things associated with the All Saints and All Souls celebrations. And then shortly after the plague, around the year 1480, you start to get these widespread witch hunts across Europe. And it's during these that tens of thousands of people, mostly women, because men are fucking assholes, were killed because they were like barely being sleepy while we record makes me very aggressive. were killed because they were suspected of witchcraft. And some of that was like you still had plague going around, and a lot of that was like with respect to they were thought to like have caused or be spreading the plague because people had like no idea how disease actually spread. And apparently they were just killing all the cats. Jesus Christ. Okay. So it is during the reign of King Henry VIII and his daughter Elizabeth I, which like King Henry VIII was like already kind of a nut job. But he is the one who, or it's during his reign that All Hallows Eve is identified as a time when witches would gather, or it's like identified as some sort of Sabbath to them. But probably what this is related to is he had beef with the Vatican and wanted to separate the Church of England from them and viewed All Saints Day as a papal holiday. So this was sort of a way to distance the Church of England from that holiday, or try to. And so another quote from that book, Trick or Treat, A History of Halloween, says, more specifically about witches, a spectacular witch trial took place during the reign of the Protestant King James I. In 1590, dozens of Scots were accused of attempting to prevent James from reaching his queen-to-be, Anne of Denmark, by gathering on Halloween night and then riding the sea in sieves, while creating storms by tossing live cats tied to human body parts into the water. After the infamous North Berwick witch trials, as they were called, Halloween was forever to be firmly associated with witches, cats, cauldrons, brooms, and the devil.
Okay. So, two things. One, okay, why is everyone so fucking mean to the cats?
I don't know, but there's like a whole Netflix documentary called Don't Fuck with Cats. So, apparently we don't put up with that shit anymore.
Right. We don't fuck with cats anymore. And then my other thought is like, once again, there's this discussion about cats, but it's not specifically black cats.
Right.
It's just, I don't know. It bothers me. I don't know where the black cat thing came from.
I don't know. I mean,
because basically everything earlier was like not, they're all just stories. That's all it is.
Right.
I'm just looking for.
You're looking for meaning where there's not any. Where there's only superstition and people who don't have science to explain anything.
Yeah. You're right. I just feel sad for the black cats.
I know. Poor cats. Although, like, to be fair, I've known some cats who are real assholes in my life, so.
Fair.
All right. And then I thought it was interesting that I read that in America, this sort of, you know, modern association of Halloween with all things dark and death and gore and everything may have been influenced by the Civil War and the fact that during it, but also after it ended, you had huge numbers of people who just never came home. And, you know, people didn't get confirmation on whether or not they were dead. They just never came back. So it made sense in that time that people sort of like told a lot more ghost stories, and ones that were, especially ones that revolved around people sort of like coming back to, you know, their home or whatever, because they were preoccupied with this idea that like their lost relatives, you know, might return, or they wanted them to return.
That's sad.
That's very sad. Yeah. So, yeah, I only laugh because that's my coping mechanism.
fake laughter hiding real tears.
Yes. Always.
Okay. Well, do you have any other thoughts about Halloween? I have a quote to end us on here, if you don't.
I do not. I think we've covered the major traditions and talked about the history of the holiday, and it was a good learning experience. No?
Yeah, no, it was. Sorry. It was a great learning experience. I learned a lot, actually.
Yeah.
And now I get to get everybody else excited with my vast Halloween knowledge. So
yeah.
Boom.
Now you're legit.
One more reason to get my sweet Halloween tattoo.
Yeah.
All right. I don't know why I wanted to end on this little quote here, but I read an article by Maria Marzullo, and the title of the article is "This Is Halloween: The True Historical Origins and Meaning." And basically, I mean, she kind of covers a lot of the stuff that we just talked about, but also covers that a lot of it is kind of, it comes from a lot of places and it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense, and that there's no real evidence that some of this stuff happened. So at the end, it's almost like an opinion piece where she talks about what her thoughts of what the meaning of Halloween is. And at one point she says, "The Halloween season is generally thought of as a spooky time of year because lurking beneath the surface of this otherwise fun holiday is the one aspect of life that all humans are conditioned to fear, death." And I just thought heavy. That was kind of heavy and spooky.
Yeah, although I think I had heard that listening to, not that specific quote, but yeah, that idea listening to the Folklore podcast, one of their Halloween special episodes. And yeah, this idea that like zombies and all this stuff is like, because people are less religious, it's definitely related to sort of us confronting the idea that we're all going to die and like what's going to happen to us afterwards and stuff.
Right. So. And giving us a way to like make it fun.
Right.
And not just sad and just, terrible.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
Before we wrap up, I wanted to put out one last reminder to please send us some spooky stories to our Spooky Science Sisters email or social media pages, and keep listening to see if you hear your story make an appearance around Halloween. Also, we've moved our final segment to the very end of each episode, so if you want to listen to this week's Short and Spooky, stay tuned after our wrap-up. So that wraps up episode 13 on Halloween traditions. Tune in next time for our special Spooky Listener Stories episode. If you like this episode, hit subscribe and share with a friend. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at SpookySciPod, Facebook at Spooky Science Sisters, and at our website, SpookyScienceSisters.com. If you have any questions about previous topics or ideas for future episodes, email us at SpookyScienceSisters@gmail.com. It's time for Short and Spooky.
Yay! So I did this week's Short and Spooky. And I did it based on a TikTok video that I saw. So you're motherfucking right that I picked it based on a TikTok video. But okay, there's this really awesome account, and basically all she does, well, she does some art stuff sometimes, but the main theme of her account, and this is someone, her account name is Geodosaurus, and she does all of her TikTok videos on facts about lakes. So she's done a lot about the Great Lakes because I think she lives somewhere around the Great Lakes in the Midwest. But for the month of October, she's been doing a Spooky Lakes series,
which
I absolutely love. And I've like learned so many things about various spooky lakes. But one that I really liked because it has some, I guess, sort of very recent scientific discoveries that have honestly just made it more of a mystery, is one called Rupkund Lake, which is a glacial lake in India, and it is sometimes called Skeleton Lake. So like just 100% perfect. Man. Yeah, for Halloween. So this lake is located in the Indian Himalayas. It is at just around 16,500 feet above sea level. So it is up there. For reference, I think the highest peak in the continental U.S. is like a little over 14,000. So it's
high.
It's really high. It is a 3-day hike from the nearest village. So it's like a very remote, significantly, like it's high altitude place. Some of the scientists one of the scientists in the articles I read about it, like said that she basically just had altitude sickness the whole time that they were there and like couldn't even hike up to the lake. So it's frozen for a lot of the year, but when the surface of the lake thaws, you can actually see hundreds of skeletons that are like on the bottom and around the lake. And like some of them, they're so well preserved because it's very cold and dry. Some of them still have skin attached and like pieces of clothing attached to them. The pictures are like super awesome. Rupkund is spelled, it's two words, R-O-O-P and then K-U-N-D. But like just do a Google image search because it's really cool. So originally it was proposed that all of these people died at the same time in like some single catastrophic event that occurred around 1,000 years ago. And one of the, I guess, popular interpretations based on injuries that they observed in some of the skeletons were that there was like some sort of like freak violent hailstorm that, you know, these people were traveling or, you know, they were all together up in the mountains and they got caught in it and, you know, they died. And now they're in this lake. But there was some relatively new genetic analysis that was done, and it is, you can read about it in a paper that was published, I think, in Nature last year, so in 2019. So it shows that the dumping of the bodies in this lake was done over a period of about 1,000 years. So most of the skeletons, so they did an analysis of 38 skeletons. And like I saw that there were, there's like over 300 skeletons up there. So over 300 people up there. So most of them died around 1,000 years ago. But some of them were, they did radiocarbon dating and they died as early or as recently as the early 1800s. So it's like a huge amount of time.
That is amazing. I mean, terrifying, I'm sure.
Right. Like, it's like the weirdest thing because it's like, like the time, like that's totally different, like cultures and everything. And so not only do you have these skeletons from like this very wide time range, but they also showed that they had variable genetic makeups. So some of the skeletons have genetic makeups that are more similar to like Mediterranean heritage, so like modern day Greece, instead of what they should be, which is like South Asian. There's also a third distinct group from Southeastern Asia. So it's like, it's just the weirdest place because like they don't really know like why. Why is there 1,000 years of bodies in this lake from like wildly different parts of the world? And this study was done on just a subsect of 38 of these, you know, 200 to 300 plus skeletons. So it's like, who knows how many other geographic areas or, you know, time periods are represented
right
in the skeletons that are there.
That is really cool. I don't know if cool is the right word, but
yeah, it's like simultaneously very creepy, but like also awesome. Super cool. So I guess it's a difficult site for anthropologists to interpret because, you know, people do go up there to hike like recreationally. And so it's been disturbed by hikers over time. There have obviously been like landslides and avalanches that have damaged the skeletons or moved them around. So it's sort of hard to tell, you know, exactly how they died or exactly how they all got there. So, you know, some people have thought, well, maybe it's just like these are all people who died because, you know, it's high altitude. There's pretty dangerous weather patterns that can happen. And it is near kind of areas where they had known migration paths or places where people would travel when they were on pilgrimages. So potentially like it's just sort of people died while they were out on that, or groups of people died while they were trying to migrate. And then avalanches or landslides or whatever just like collect all the bodies and all the skeletons into the lake. But I think other anthropologists, like that's one interpretation, but a lot of anthropologists think that it's just such a large concentration of skeletons.
Right.
And so it's like unlikely that they weren't put there on purpose. Like that somebody was putting them there.
Like how convenient that that many bodies
right.
end
yeah,
up in the
they
same
all just
spot.
Like happened to end up there.
Right.
So it's like they just said like if you find that many bodies, that many skeletons, like it's probably a graveyard. But they like don't know why or who was putting them there or what exactly happened to all of them. So it is like just the coolest thing I've ever heard.
That is really cool. Great short and spooky.
Yeah. See? Thank you, TikTok.
That wraps us up. If you like this episode, hit subscribe and share with a friend. You can find us on TikTok at Spooky Science, Twitter and Instagram at Spooky SciPod, Facebook at Spooky Science Sisters, and at our website, SpookyScienceSisters.com. If you have any questions about previous topics or ideas for future episodes, email us at SpookyScienceSisters@gmail.com. As always, thank you for listening and stay spooky.
Spooky Science Sisters is a proud member of the Evergreen Podcasts Network. For more information or to check out other shows, please visit evergreenpodcast.com.
You might be surprised to know that not all serial killers are straight, cisgender white men. And the victims of true crime are not a monolith either. She's Wendy and I'm Beth. And together we host Fruit Loop's Serial Killers of Color, a true crime podcast.
Together we take deep dives into the true crime stories about marginalized and minoritized perps and victims that often go untold.
We also provide the context and nuance that these stories deserve. At Fruit Loops, we're serving up true crime with a side of history, society, culture, and some fun.
Listen to Fruit Loop Serial Killers of Color on Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.